When it comes to security in war zones, what is considered inherently governmental? What can be contracted out to private businesses? Currently, more than 40,000 private security contractors are working in Iraq and Afghanistan. Their role and oversight were examined and debated during 2 days of hearings by the Federal Commission on Wartime Contracting in Iraq and Afghanistan. Michael Tebow is the co-chair of that commission. He joins us now live. Mr. Tebow, it is always a pleasure to have you on the show. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Good morning, Amy and Tom. It's a pleasure.
Now, there were two hearings, the first about inherently governmental, the second about the role. Let's talk about each, if you don't mind. The inherently governmental issue seems to be cropping up over and over. What did you present to lawmakers, and what did you learn in the exchange?
Well, I think the simple way of looking at what we learned is that there is, I'd like to use the words of Al Berman, who is one of our witnesses. We all know Al from his former role as the Office of Federal Procurement Policy. And I think he said it well when he said there's no bright shining line related to the proposed and an upcoming new guidance from OFPP. And the words they use are, how do you define closely associated versus critical? And then realizing that closely associated in that expression is those things that are so much unto or like the government that they ought to be done by the government. But then when you get down to is it really critical, then you have a choice, and you can still use contractors if the interpretation is it's not really that close, or you can use the government. When you put all that together, there isn't a bright shining line.
Hmm. And while it's being debated almost academically and soon to be practically here in the United States, is it really useful at this point to try too hard to define it in Afghanistan, where you have a hot war situation going on? Isn't that something we can probably kick down the road a little bit until things aren't so dangerous there?
Well, I think your first part, you actually had two parts there. Is it useful to debate it? And then you had the Afghanistan part. I think you're spot on the Afghanistan part. But I think both for Afghanistan and Iraq, given the current situation, is it useful to debate it? I think the debate is critical, but the reality is exactly what you said. There are 40,000 private security contractors that are out there. And so it's useful to debate it, but reality is how can you best use what you have now, and then how can you best prepare for the future? Because right now, it's a world of private security contractors.
And that's the reality of the world that we're dealing with. It's not as though they're going to just go away and everything else is going to be insourced back to the military in one form or another. We have to have them.
That's exactly right. And State Department, which has been very proactive and has really done a lot of good work in the last year, you know, they brought it home when they said, we have about 900 doing personal security for diplomats and individuals that need protected. We need another 2,200 in order to do our job. Just in Iraq, we have 1,800 that are doing base security, and that's a very rigid requirement in the State Department, and we need another 4,600. There's a real question, even in terms of obtaining the right talented, quality private security contractors, that if you turn that around on its head and said, well, we need government, we need a capability within the government, they're confident the private security contractors can grow that, but it's a real challenge. In present day, it's clear it's an impossibility to back out the private security contractors and back in federal or government employees of any stripe.
And there have been some celebrated, you know, horror stories with private security contractors, but those go back to, I believe, 2007. But in general, by your observation, are they mostly doing a good job?
I think you have to parse the situation a little bit. I think state has done some reform is probably too strong a word, but they've made some corrections. Based on work that we've done, they've changed, at least for this year, and we hope it's permanent, their ability to use what's called best value. They don't just have to pursue the lowest price. And the quality of what they're getting, your examples of 2007, every indication is it's top-notch. In the case of defense, they still have a policy of going towards lowest price technically acceptable. And one of the things that was brought out is that used to be fixed price type, lowest price, technically acceptable. You would get a person from Peru or Colombia for $1,200 a month. And sounds pretty good. Mm. And then they found individuals from Nepal for $1,000 a month. So everybody was wondering, how do I hire Nepalese? And then they found individuals from Uganda for $800 a month. And in order to compete, everybody hired Ugandans. Now the contractor that has trouble and is getting most of the awards has found Sierra Leoneans that will work for $250 a month. $250 a month. Well, you know, our concern is maybe you get what you pay for, both in terms of management and the tight profit lines and ability to do the kinds of quality control that a rush to the bottom in price. You know, we're talking about security of American troops. We're talking about security of other Americans. We're talking about security of American contractors. So that's a discussion we're having with defense. And in fairness to defense, they were exceptionally open-minded about that yesterday. And we're hoping they'll go the direction of state and get off this rush to the bottom and get on to a best value so that you can at least reward contractors that are doing this job that many of them are.
Yeah, sounds like there's both a danger of competence levels at the basic level and also where the loyalties really might lie.
Yeah.
I think
that's the concern. You know, we had examples where Iraqi nationals, you know, and you hope they all like America, but some of them don't, had been posted, given weapons, and told to guard American troops, and they hadn't been cleared.
It almost sounds like it doesn't matter if they like America or not. They like the money. They like the money.
Well, you know, you're exactly right. And the topic you were talking about earlier about this $2 billion in Afghanistan,
mm-hmm.
You know, they like the money. In a way, we're trying to buy down the insurgency by bringing them into a situation where it's in their better interest, both economically and future development, to support the American government. And that seems pretty smart in a way.
We're speaking with Mike Tebow, co-chair of the Commission on Wartime Contracting in Iraq and Afghanistan. And, you know, there's a lot of debate about this on the Hill. When you speak with lawmakers and present some of the findings, do you find that, you know, headlines aside and grandstanding aside, is there a pretty good understanding of the nuances on the Hill so that you feel like the whatever legislation might follow is going to be helpful?
Sometimes, yes. And it's growing, and it's not a perfect world. Sometimes, personally, I have concern that they're not tracking an issue to the depth, and that's because the issue suddenly emerges. This issue's been around a while, and there's a real spotlight on it, and especially staff for some of the significant leaders on the Hill. They are up to speed, and the issues, as we've brought out here, aren't clear. And therefore, I think everyone is trying to find a position that seems to make the most sense. And I think that's where this discussion, is so significant.
Will it become even more muddy as the U.S. hands off those responsibilities in Iraq from the Department of Defense to the State Department? And of course, State Department needs security, too. So they're going to need contractors for that purpose. But then you get into the issue of, are they going to be flying U.S. Helicopters? Are they going to be handling U.S. guns? I mean, where's the line and how is that going to be handled?
Oh my goodness. I'm really glad you brought that up. And I always use the, because it's the best graphically, whether you've seen Hurt Locker or not, I use the Academy Award winning Hurt Locker as the example. Anyone who's seen it or can imagine it, those vehicles are huge motorhome size with antenna coming out, and typically there are two or three or four that are clearing a road of explosive devices. Now think there. Typically, there's a couple of, you know, and contractors will say, we do defense, we don't do offense, and by, they're right. But think of that as a road being cleared now by the United States Army. The United States Army is neutralizing the IED as they do it, but there's a squad of soldiers. And they're not defensive. They're defensive. They're protecting them themselves. They're on a road that's not secure. So we're talking about state having to do this instead of the Army.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a squad of military, and if bad guys pop their heads out, they're not defensive. They're taking them down. Well, now, there's a great example. It's one of 14 items that's been listed, which is explosive device removal, that if you give to a contractor, I would propose to you that from an inherently governmental, there is no debate. You know, if someone pops up or goes after those two individuals that are neutralizing the IED, it's the job of the other 10 or 12 to take them down. That's one of 14 items that State Department says, really, at this point, they're acknowledging we have no skill sets. We're going to have to turn to industry or the Iraqi army. The Iraqi army doesn't do any of those 14 items. So, you know, another example is if someone's hurt, wounded, through whatever means. The military now flies in the removal of the wounded with the skill sets that are incredible in the United States Army. Now, in the other services, contractors going to be doing that.
Yeah, can you imagine giving such an order like that to go into the line of fire to a $250 a month Ugandan? He's going to say, you crazy man, you go ahead and do that. So very quickly, what's next for the commission? What's next on your agenda?
Next, you know, we're mounting several. Next, the big project that I'd like to share is in this area of reconstruction. There are huge, several hundred million dollar projects. The simplest way to say it, all over Afghanistan. They have been all over Iraq, but they're winding up. And the question is, are they being properly managed? Are these construction projects effective? You know, what are the issues associated with it? Some of the things, what is the contracting processes in order to do it? And the only way that you really get the answer, and that's the interesting part, is you have to go put eyes and feet on the ground where they're doing the work. And that's pretty interesting because commission staff, in this case, are going to be compelled to go out and look at some projects that maybe some other folks don't want to look at for a variety of reasons. So that's one area that in the next couple, 3 months, the commission's going to be spending a lot of time.
Well, we'll have to have you back and tell us the update when you find out what those people on the ground saw.
Always
in the meantime, thanks for joining us today. Fascinating.
Thank you, Amy and Tom.